What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the show. Today, we're going to have a little New Year's resolution rant. I'm going to try and keep this on the shorter side. I put out a newsletter. Today is December 30th. Put out a newsletter this morning about New Year's resolutions. It'll be a lot of similar content, but I felt like as I was writing this newsletter, I really wanted to talk about it. Just felt like that's the medium where I express myself the best and am able to add, you know, sorts of context that sometimes are a little bit more challenging in written format. And again, for people that don't really like reading content, maybe this is something that you'll enjoy listening to. This rant, and I don't even know if it's, you know, rant is the right word. Rant usually implies that I'm like bothered. And I guess the thing I'd be bothered by is people who kind of poo-poo the idea of New Year's resolutions. Oh, you know, nobody ever sticks to them. And the gym's full of people in January that you know, aren't going to be here in a month. And just kind of getting angry at people for even trying, for setting New Year's resolutions. This idea that setting a, and we'll talk about this in a second, like anchoring goal setting to a kind of time in the year or time in your life, you know, sort of this idea of like, oh, you don't need to start till Monday. Like poo-pooing that idea, I think is at the detriment of people who are looking to change their behaviors. I think as a coach, I used to be the, like, why wait till Monday? Just start right now. And, you know, there's never going to be a perfect time. And I think that there's just, it's just not that simple, that there are opportunities for us to capitalize on timing. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. I think, you know, when people talk about poo-pooing New Year's resolutions, they'll pull up some statistics. And frankly, those statistics usually are like the highlight, the headline from like a news article or something, not actually from a scientific article. There was a paper back in 2020 that looked at a lot of the research on New Year's resolutions and found that, you know, roughly 19% of people maintain their resolution for 2 years. And we'll get into why I actually think that's actually a pretty optimistic statistic. They also found that 20 to 40 people fully achieve their goal within the first year. I mean, that's a pretty optimistic statistic. And at the 2 year mark, 32 to 60% of people are, you know, in quotes, still working on it, which, yeah, I would bet the majority of people. I mean, I'd be quite pessimistic about the statistics. The statistics aren't necessarily where I would derive optimism, and I wasn't expecting to when I started the old Google, but those don't sound too pessimistic to me. And we'll go into beyond the statistics now, but again, whether those stats are perfect or not, I think it's a reminder that it's not this doom and gloom, like setting New Year's resolutions. It's almost like it comes with this stigma of mental weakness that you've waited to pair your goal setting with some sort of timing in the year, as if there's like something weird about that or weak about that, where a strong-willed person doesn't have to wait to this day or this time of the year to set goals. And so I want to make 4 points. I'll try and keep it concise. I'm going to try and keep it short. I want to start with this idea of what's called the clean slate effect. The clean slate effect is a physiological phenomenon where people feel more motivated to pursue goals and make changes following temporal landmarks like New Year's Day, birthdays, or things like Mondays, right? These moments create a mental separation between our past and present selves, making us feel disconnected from previous failures and more optimistic about future success, right? It can help you kind of mentally segregate your past self from your new idealized self. And I know that maybe idealized, it's like, it's these landmarks that they interrupt your routine. They prompt reflection. People are more likely to think broadly about their lives during these transition periods, let's say between years, either it's a birthday or a new year. Like these temporal landmarks, they provide an opportunity for reflection and a platform for change, right? It's why I never poo-poo a client who wants to start our coaching on a Monday or after their vacation. I think you know, you could argue it's never going to be the perfect time. You know, if you know, there's always going to be another vacation or a weekend or a party. And if you know, push off beginning your healthy habit formation or reformation till afterwards, you're kind of skirting or avoiding the problem. Like, I see the logic there, but if these temporal landmarks prime somebody to put their best foot forward, like, why don't you use it? Like, it's an, you know, we know that there's some threshold of, some people say it takes 21 days to build a habit. That's just like, I wouldn't get hung up in the actual number there of 21 days, but there is something of the longer you do something, the more likely it will become habit, right? In the beginning, there's a lot of friction to creating a habit, and the longer you do something, in most cases, the less friction it will take to keep doing it. So the way I think about it is if I can get somebody primed for change, in a high state of readiness for change, even if it's based on, like, you know, a temporal landmark, some sort of time related thing after my vacation on Monday, January 1st, June 1st, whatever it is, September 1st, my kids go back to school, whatever. If that person is primed for change and I can give them the tools, kind of, I can give them the vehicle to make some positive changes, and I can get them 30, 60, 90 days of doing that thing, right? They're coming to me with a high readiness of change or a state of readiness to change. I'm giving them a vehicle to be most productive and consistent, the information that they need, strategies and structure. Together, maybe we get 60, 90, 120 days, you know, 6 months of consistency with a habit that they wouldn't otherwise have gotten. And so you're matching a good strategy with a good time. And again, there isn't ever going to be a perfect time. You know, technically it's arbitrary, right? Technically, these temporal landmarks, January 1st, September 1st, Monday, they're arbitrary, but who cares if they're arbitrary? Why not? Like, people talk all the time about using, like, it's kind of like a placebo here, where, like, it's not actually a special day, but it might feel like a special day. And because it feels like a special day, maybe we can capitalize on it. And so, yeah, it doesn't change much in the sense that there will always be another vacation or weekend or party. And, you know, starting after this might seem like avoiding the problem, but I find that you got to use every tool at your disposal. And if we admit that there's something to be said about getting people on the right track and building consistency and seeing results, and that those results be getting more motivation to take more action, to get more results, yeah, I'm going to use everything to my advantage as a coach. And if the match, you know, if the match gets lit, so to speak, the motivational match is lit by some temporal landmark, man, I'm going to jump on it. So the clean slate effect is absolutely a real thing. And I just don't know why we wouldn't utilize it as coaches, as people. You know, again, I'm coming at this from a context of a coach who's, you know, has more one-on-one inquiries at this time of year, has more people joining my group program at this time of year, and understandably so, and looking to capitalize, not necessarily from a business perspective, but from people who are in a higher state of readiness to change. Point number two, most of us don't reflect and set goals enough, right? Goal setting is, I mean, there is a huge, huge list of things that people nod along with that they know they should do, but don't, right? Like everything to do with sleep hygiene, like all of the, like, get off your phone at this time, like, don't look at your phone in the morning, you know, mindfulness practices. Like, I think of a lot of those things as, like, things people know they should do, but they don't do. And, like, honestly, let's be real. When's the last time you sat down with a pad and paper, metaphorically, reflected on your life, right? Your family life, your career, your health and wellness, your, you know, anything, your hobbies, sat down with a pad and paper, reflected on those things, and made an intelligent, thoughtful list, an intelligent, thoughtful, productive list of ways to improve it or change it for the better or whatever you want to say. I bet most people the answer is never. You know, most people have not actually sat down and gone over the things in their life that they want to improve and spent an hour sitting down, planning, preparing how to make those changes. And so, you know, if setting New Year's resolutions is the, you know, I'm going to use the word excuse because I think admitting that temporal landmarks are semi-arbitrary, even though there is an existence of this clean slate effect, is, you know, is fair, me playing, you know, this fairly. If setting New Year's resolutions, if the idea of January 1st as a motivator is an excuse or gives you the burst of motivation that you need to actually sit down and write down some goals, I think that's fantastic. Like, I hate this, like, well, you shouldn't need for it to be January 1st. I mean, I get what that person means. But if there's somebody who's like, hey, New Year's is rolling around and I'm excited, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to set some goals for myself. What are we telling that person? No, you should, it's December 20th. I know you have 800 different activities to do from now till the end of the year, but you should start all of those, you know, real concise habits right now. Maybe. But I think if this was December 20th and you were like, hey, should I start my goals on January 1st or right now? I think you'd have a really good argument for being like, hey, you know, the logic of there's going to be holidays next year and we're going to have to deal with them, so might as well start now. Like, there's logic there. But if your mind is like, you know what, like it's really chaotic right now. And if my goal is to string together 60 days of consistency with this habit, I bet you I'm better off looking ahead to January 1st and starting it. Now, I bet you there are people who take issue with that, who hold really strong values of like, you shouldn't wait. It's never a good time, never a perfect time. Don't wait for that perfect time. But I don't know. I think that there's a more realistic middle ground where you can harness the power of temporal landmarks, the clean slate effect. You can harness it for good. You can, you know, and you can almost tackle the what to do next year during the holidays. You can tackle that, you know, 10 months from now when you've built 10 months of consistency. Yeah. And so I think if setting New Year's resolutions is the excuse or burst of motivation you need to finally sit down with a pad and paper in air quotes and make an intelligent, thoughtful list of ways to improve your life, holy crap, please do it. Point number three, people suck at setting goals, right? And so this is like I'll do a quick sub rant here, right? It's a little tangent here, is that all of you have heard this, the statistic, oh, 95% of diets fail. Yes, that's not really a real statistic, by the way. But one of my biggest issues with that statistic is that I'd say 95% of people trying to lose weight do really dumb shit that you wouldn't expect to work long term. You know, it's not surprising that most people don't keep the weight off because most people use terrible strategies to try and lose weight and keep it off. Right? Like if most people are like, hey, I want to get in better cardiovascular health. And I'm like, okay, cool. What are you doing? They're like, well, I'm going to run a marathon every day. And then you find out that 95% of them don't stick to it long term and end up quitting running and being exactly where they were when they started. Would you be surprised? Of course not. Running a marathon every day is inherently unsustainable. It's a terrible strategy for the goal of losing weight and keeping it off. So this idea of, you know, 95% of diets fail, it's like, that is not a real statistic. If you want to take home from that, hey, too high of a percentage of people that pursue weight loss are unsuccessful at maintaining it forever. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But whatever the statistic is, and we'll never really know, but whatever the statistic is would be improved if people used better strategies, right? If people hired a coach, if people, you know, looked at, you know, focused on sustainability, if people had accurate info instead of doing detoxes and going carnivore and going keto. And again, I'm not against ketogenic dieting in general, but on average, you know, most people in a real free living scenario in real life go keto for a while and then quit and fall off because, you know, eating carbs is delicious and, you know, you don't need to be cutting out carbs to lose weight anyway. All right, might work for some people, totally. But I think that the statistic of how many people, you know, aren't weight loss maintainers for life, a large percentage of that is the strategies people use. So when people are like, oh, people don't stick to their New Year's resolutions, it's like, well, people make terrible goals. You know, we're terrible at setting goals. We're terrible at making a plan, you know. Not everyone, by the way, and I don't mean it's not black and white, but that statistic to me strikes me, again, whatever the correlate of that statistic is for New Year's resolutions, strikes me as indicative of how bad we are at setting goals, not necessarily that the act of goal setting around temporal landmarks, utilizing the clean slate effect, is inherently a bad idea, right? And so, yeah, you know, if you want to make the claim that New Year's resolutions are dumb because no one sticks to them, a big reason people might not stick to them is because the goals they set them up for failure, right? And so here are my two, let's say, best pieces of advice for setting better goals. The first is setting process-oriented goals, not outcome-oriented goals. An outcome goal is focused on the end result you want to achieve, like lose 30 pounds or make $1 million or get a new job or run a 3-hour marathon. A process-oriented goal, process-driven goals, focus on the specific actions and behaviors within your control that lead to those outcomes, right? For example, go for one walk per day, eat a serving of vegetables with every meal, get up 30 minutes earlier, apply to 3 jobs per week, right? The key difference is that process goals are entirely within your control, while outcome goals often depend on external factors as well, right? Making $1 million, getting a new job, running a 3-hour marathon, some of those things aren't entirely in your control. But if we look at the get a new job thing, like you could get up 30 minutes earlier and, you know, you know, work, you know, read some sort of self-development book to start your day, right? You could apply to 3 jobs per week. You could practice strategies for interviewing, right? Getting better at you know, doing interviewing. I crack myself up when I talk about that, because I just have not had a conventional job. So I'm like, well, what would you do? What would you do? You know, and so those things are under your control. And people don't like the control thing because, you know, philosophically, you could say that there are even things within that that aren't under your control. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, those are way more in your control than whether or not you get a new job, whether or not you make $1 million, right? Losing 30 pounds, I get that that can be a goal that you ultimately want to accomplish. But, you know, when it comes to actually achieving that goal, I'd rather see somebody look at the daily habits that they can improve their consistency with that would lead to that, like eating a serving of vegetables with every meal, like getting, you know, increasing their protein intake, like going for a walk per day, like strength training, you know, like maybe tracking your calories. Again, there's a whole host of things, but I'd rather people look at processes, you know, things that they have control over on a day-to-day basis over time, instead of just writing down a whole bunch of shit this way. This isn't a list that you're writing to Santa Claus about all a bunch of stuff that you want. I don't want you to write a list of stuff you want. I want you to write a list of stuff you're going to do to get the things that you want, right? And the next is, you know, a bit of a psychological framing. It's instead of, I'd rather you write or utilize approach-oriented goals than avoidance-oriented goals. Approach-oriented goals focus on moving towards something positive, right? Eating more vegetables and protein to improve my energy levels so I feel better and, you know, show up for the people I love in my life. Learning a new language to connect better with people and colleagues in my life. You know, lifting weights to improve joint pain and physical function so I can play with my grandkids, right? They are focused on sort of like this additive mentality. You are looking to add something positive, whereas an avoidance-oriented goal is focused on moving away from something negative, right? So it's about subtracting a negative instead of adding a positive. And you know, you can flip these and, you know, say them in both ways. You could say, instead of eating more vegetables and protein to improve energy levels, you could say, you know, eat less junk food so I'm less fat, you know, or instead of lifting weights to improve joint pain and physical function, blood markers, so I can live longer, play with my grandkids, you could be like, hey, I want to work out so I can look better, so I stop hating myself. You know, they are about avoiding a negative instead of pursuing a positive. And this makes me think of the sorts of goals, just about when it comes to nutrition, where, and again, I listed these kind of, but this is coming to mind now. When people are looking to improve their nutrition, I'd rather them focus on adding than subtracting. I'd rather people focus on what are the things I can add to my life that will improve my nutrition and health instead of the thing. Because the truth is, yeah, like on both sides of the spectrum, eating out less and cooking more, right? Those is one thing is doing something less, one thing is doing something more. They can both be helpful. Eating less hyper-palatable processed yummy snacks, or eating more fruits, vegetables, lean protein, healthy fats, nuts, seeds, legumes, all that stuff. I think on average, I'd want people to focus way more on the additive side of things. If you're looking to improve your nutrition, the top 5 things I'm going to tell you to do are going to be about the things you should do / add to your life, not the things you should not do and avoid in your life. And I think that that's ironically where a lot of the content is today on social media. It's like, hey, avoid this ingredient, avoid that ingredient, avoid seed oils, avoid this artificial sweetener, avoid this, you know, avoid glyphosate, avoid all of these, avoid non-organic foods, you know. And I just think on average, it's a more negative headspace. I think there's a lot I would tease apart about those actual pieces of advice as far as meaning. But the key difference here is just the psychological framing. Approach goals create motivation through positive aspirations and growth, while avoidance goals are motivated by, you know, preventing negative outcomes. And there is research that suggests approach-oriented goals often lead to a better psychological outcomes and sustained motivation. I think there was some paper where people who, the group that used approach-oriented goals were like, you know, 62% more likely to achieve their goals than people who used avoidance-oriented goals. And so it might not seem like a big deal. It might seem like semantics. You might be like, well, I'm saying the same thing in a different way. It's like, yeah, well, dude, saying things in different ways is freaking powerful. Right? It's not, you know, how you frame things is more powerful than you think. And the last point, and then I'll let you guys get out of here, is that, and this might be the biggest one, like You don't have to achieve 1% of the goal for the act of goal setting to have been worth it. Right? Like maybe you didn't lose 50 pounds. Maybe you lost 10. Maybe you didn't go to the gym 200 times this year. Maybe you went 100, right? Maybe you didn't have vegetables at every meal, but maybe most of them, right? You don't need to achieve 100% of the goal for goal setting process to be worth, for the goal setting process to be worthwhile. It just has to move you in a positive direction that you may not have otherwise gone. Now, yeah, there's other content. There's like people who are like, well, you know, if you keep losing and gaining weight, that's bad for you. That's not true. P.S. Weight cycling, there is no research that weight cycling is bad for you. Now, psychologically, it might not be great. And if it causes, if over that period of time, wow, I did not mean to open that Pandora's box here. But people who lose weight and are healthier, let's say you're 300 pounds and you lose 100 pounds and you stay there for a year and a half and then you gain 100 pounds back and you're 300 pounds. Like, and let's say you do that five times. So you spent five times 18 months at a lower, healthier weight. You are healthier than if you had just remained 300 pounds the whole time. So my point, I don't want to get hung up on the weight cycling stuff. Maybe a conversation for another day. But you don't have to achieve 100% of the goal for the goal setting process to have been worth it. There's this whole, you know, you shoot for the moon, land on a star, which ironically, the star is further away. So, you know, there's something to be said about that. But you shoot for a star, land on the moon, maybe. But yeah, you might not be going to the gym right now, and you set a goal of going four times a week. But you know, again, I would say that that's a bit of ambitious of going from zero to four times a week. But you might try and go four times, you end up only going three times, or end up only going two times. That's still 100 to 150 more workouts this year than you would have otherwise done, right? And trying to have a vegetable at every meal, you know, but only doing it, you know, let's say two out of three meals per day is still an amazing achievement. It's still an amazing achievement. I guess while I'm word vomiting on this last point, I would add to the goal, how to set goals section of this from the previous point to remain flexible. I forgot what study I was looking at yesterday in preparation for the newsletter, but there was a study where people who went into it people who went into their goals with a more flexible mindset and were more likely to go through it and achieve it, go through it with a more optimistic psychological state and actually achieve their goal. So I've talked about that in other podcasts, but the idea of being flexible, the idea of zooming out and looking at things over the long term is incredibly helpful for sure. So quick recap, and then we'll let you guys get out of here. I think people who poo-poo New Year's resolutions are misunderstanding the clean slate effect and, you know, the potential to kind of placebo yourself into a burst of motivation that if you stick with it might help you build a habit that you might not otherwise have built, right? Temporal landmarks are useful. I'm not saying every coaching client I've ever had should start on a Monday or you should never start before you go on vacation. I think it's on an individual basis, but if you were planning on making a lot of changes and it's December 25th and you're thinking, well, you know, this is a batshit crazy week ahead, you know, maybe I'll start on January 1st. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, by the way. I think that you could say that people who start on December 20th and end up having a terrible 10 days who are not prepared to give themselves the type of grace that they would have to give themselves during that time end up feeling pretty pessimistic by the time it rolls around to January 1st. And if they'd started on January 1st and built some consistency, they might have felt better. So again, I think, you know, how you do this for which person at which time, it's contextual and individualized, but I think the clean slate effect is something we should be using for good, not poo-pooing. I also think most of us don't reflect and set goals enough. So kind of, again, poo-pooing the idea that this might be a good excuse to do so kind of hurts my soul. I think goal setting is something that people just don't do. And so here we have this big, huge temporal landmark that we're all kind of going through together. And for people that feel like it's a nudge to sit down and take out a pad and paper and write some goals, like more power to you. I absolutely love that. Number three, people suck at setting goals. So look, I know a lot of people like SMART goals, right? The acronym SMART. I think that that can be very helpful. I think that it can be very helpful. I prefer a focus on maybe starting with an outcome goal, writing something like lose 30 pounds, and then writing five process goals on how I'm going to get there and write them in a way where they are all written in an approach-oriented kind of verbiage or manner, as opposed to an avoidance oriented. Remember, stay flexible, and you don't have to achieve 100% of the goal for the goal setting process to have been worthwhile. All right, guys, I'll see you in the next episode. Happy New Year.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram, @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.